You're listening to Recovery, Healing, Outreach, and Awareness, a podcast about domestic violence, sponsored by Randy's House of Angels. Domestic or intimate partner violence is a complex and silent epidemic that affects millions of people worldwide. To respond to the overwhelming issues associated with domestic violence, Randy's House of Angels has produced a series of podcasts that will bring this epidemic to the forefront of public consciousness and break the silence that often shrouds it. This is Paul Miller, producer of this program, and by creating a dedicated platform, Randy's House of Angels hopes to create a safe space for survivors, advocates, and experts to share their stories, insights, and knowledge. A series of topics will be discussed that can offer vital support and resources to victims and survivors, helping them realize that they are not alone and that there is help available. It can also serve as a catalyst for raising awareness and fostering necessary conversations within families, communities, and institutions to empower individuals, foster empathy, and inspire collective action toward eradicating domestic violence while creating a safer, more compassionate society. We invite you to access the podcast by going to randyshouseofangels.org. On today's podcast, we will be defining and providing an overview of intimate partner violence within LGBTQ plus relationships. We will highlight the importance of addressing issues within the broader community and begin to understand their unique challenges. We will explore the intersecting identities, such as race, gender, and socioeconomic status, and how the impact experiences of IPV within the LGBTQ plus community. We will also discuss the different stereotypes and stigmas that contribute to silence and isolation in cases of IPV. Joining us today is Dr. Jaylene Patterson. Dr. J, as they like to be called, is a Latinx scholar activist, licensed clinical social worker in Pennsylvania, and an associate professor within the Social Work and Gerontology Department at Shippensburg University. In addition to their academic and clinical work, Dr. J is involved in various national and local service initiatives focused on advocating for sexuality, social justice, and increasing inclusivity and equity, centering on the experiences of marginalized racial, sexual, and gender diverse communities. The facilitator of today's podcast is Dr. Ellen Smith. Ellen Smith, MD, retired after 30 years of teaching and practicing family medicine in the Harrisburg area. Her undergraduate studies were at Hollins University, and she completed her medical degree at the Penn State University College of Medicine in Hershey, PA. In addition, she completed a family medicine residency at Lancaster General Hospital. Since retiring, she has studied adversity, how a traumatized brain works, and how to bounce back and become more resilient. She is passionate and appreciative of the opportunity to educate thousands of people about these topics. She also volunteers at the Trinity Preschool of Harrisburg, a grant-funded, inner-city, trauma-informed preschool. Finally, she has developed a tool called the Personal Resilience Planner, which takes the above concepts and provides a practical way to look at strengths, trauma responses, resilience, and how to progress in these areas over time. Dr. Smith welcomes opportunities to discuss her work.
Oh, Dr. J. Jaylene, it's so good to see you here today. Today you're going to talk about when love is love and violence is not, how to navigate domestic violence in LGBTQ relationships. Wow, that is such an interesting topic. Why is this important?
Well, first, thank you for having me here. I'm really excited to talk about this. It's actually a topic that I don't think we give a lot of visibility to, and that's one of the pieces as to why it's significant. First off, it's June. I don't know when this episode comes out, but we're recording in June, which is Pride Month, and that in itself is a really important part of LGBTQ plus history in terms of the evolution of our communities and the fight for visibility. So this topic is really aligned with the effort to increase awareness of not only the challenges, but the strengths and resiliency of our communities And so thinking about and talking about intimate partner violence within these communities helps normalize the fact and chips, regardless if they are same sex or of different sexes or of multiple sexes, face these sort of challenges.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so important that folks who are not LGBTQ plus understand this? Because I think a lot of folks might say, not me, don't need to understand.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people kind of approach these topics in that way, right? What's the significance? Part of the work that I do as not only a social worker, social work educator, who specializes in sexuality, social justice, is help people understand that all oppression is interconnected, right? So my experiences are tied to your experiences just on the sole basis that we are humans, right? So our humanity in itself is interconnected. And so we also don't know everybody's story, right? And so if I am to, you know, develop empathy for you and your story, it's also important for you to connect with mine. And so, you know, folks might say, oh, I don't see the relevancy. And yet you don't know who your neighbors are. You don't know, you know, truly the stories of every family member or every friend that you have. And so you may not think that it's connected to you or relevant to you. But in fact, it could be more personal than you may realize.
Yes, I can imagine that so. And so let's go to what are some common stories? There, of course, is multiple stories, but what are some of the things that you hear and see and that might be helpful for people to understand?
Yeah. So I think you probably have folks talk about this all the time, right? There's abuse comes in different forms, right? We tend to focus on physical abuse because that seems for many people, oh, that's obvious. So that's abuse. So that's how we define that. That's certainly a piece of, intimate partner violence that LGBTQ plus folks may navigate. But some of the other dynamics are unique to the coming out experience in itself, right? We're not necessarily existing in the most safest of times. We see a lot of legislation that is being passed that really is, in some ways, having folks kind of go backwards in terms of their comfort in being open about their sexuality, and in regards to trans and non-binary folks in terms of their gender identities, right? And so how that plays a part in terms of the cycle of abuse is, you know, some abusers may utilize that piece, knowing the stigma, knowing the potential loss of, you know, someone finding out about their partner's sexuality or gender. And so they may use that as a means of manipulation. And so you might have physical abuse, certainly, but you might definitely have some psychological and emotional aspects to that abuse process. And so holding over somebody's head, hey, your family doesn't know, right, about who you are. And so using that as a sort of, you know, carrot dangling over somebody's head as motivation to do whatever it is they want them to do. And that it's easier to think, oh, just like leave that person, right? Or just come out of the closet and then you don't have that piece. But the reality is, as I mentioned, right, there is a lot of loss, right? So depending on your level of reliance on family support systems, which everybody needs family, whether that's chosen or biologically related. You know, that connection can be very strong. For some people, it's also a cultural connection. And so it's not just losing that family support. It's also losing, you know, especially for queer people of color, right? That cultural, that sense of community and cultural connection, that's also very important. So we see a lot of that intersection of abuse and homophobia and heterosexism and transphobia and using that. And then especially, right, police intervention. So historically, within LGBTQ plus communities, interactions with police have not always been the most positive or most affirming. And so, you know, again, we have into play this aspect of heterosexism, homophobia, transphobia. And someone knowing that will be like, well, go ahead, call the police. Will you be believed? We don't know. And in the case of same-sex relationships, especially men, we have sexism at play as well, because police will be like, what man's going to be abused, right? And so in those dynamics, right, you could see that in heterosexual relationships with, you know, a male victim, right, perpetrated by a female. But in the same-sex relationship to gay men, right, you not just have the sexism of, hey, be a man. You shouldn't be, you know, men don't get abused. But you also have the homophobia of like, I'm not getting near that, right? Like, that's not, I'm not okay with that. You guys do your own thing, whatever. And so those are some of the, you know, specific dynamics that are at play. And I think it's really that intersection of the larger societal oppression that trickles down at the interpersonal, personal level.
That's really interesting. So there's an additional degree of oppression because of someone's sexual orientation.
Correct.
Something that's come up in the past has been financial and sexual violence. Can you speak to that? Does that occur in the LGBTQ community?
Absolutely. I mean, I think you find those kinds of levels in multiple ways. One being, you know, in thinking about sexual violence, we also, you know, we see that layer of homophobia, heterosexism, and transphobia. Number one being, you know, this misconception about, right, what is sex? First off, as someone who is a, you know, sexuality educator and therapist, that in itself is a big topic. But with our communities, there's almost this like, is it even legitimate? So is it legitimate enough to say I've been sexually assaulted, because does this count kind of aspect to it? Which yes. You find that in a lot of areas too, right? Well, it was just this thing. And it's like, actually, anything that crosses your boundary is not okay, right? And even within a relationship, you know, there's that assumption of your body is, you know, fair game because we are together. So you'd certainly see those same dynamics in LGBTQ plus relationships. I think, again, pieces that might be unique to their experience is that internalized homophobia or transphobia that makes it feel like, you know, well, at least I have someone who loves and cares for me, or at least I have someone who wants to be sexual with me, right? So I should be okay with these things, right? When that's not necessarily true. The financial piece, it also comes into play in a lot of LGBTQ plus communities, especially queer people of color, and then even more so, trans women of color tend to struggle most with secure employment, secure financials due to navigating the world as trans, but also the world as a Black or brown trans woman. They are targeted mostly as you know, in terms of hate crimes is a lot higher among trans women of color. And so, you know, the level of oppression and experiences of stigma that lead to that lack of financial security leaves them susceptible to people kind of preying on that as well. So, hey, I'll take care of you, right? Not only will I love you, right, but I will take care of you. And so because I'm going to do those things, then you're going to do these things in the way I want you to do them.
That's really interesting.
The annual A Round for Randy golf outing is hosted by Randy's House of Angels on Friday, September 6th, 2024 at Rich Valley Golf Course. Registration begins at 7:15 a.m. with an 8 a.m. start. The annual golf outing began in 2016, and each year the outing has attracted more golfers and awareness of the cause. Since 2016, the golf outing has grossed over $100,000. Check out randyshouseofangels.org for more information.
What about the mention you made of the cycle of abuse? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I forget how this is not common knowledge, right? Every time I go to teach it, you know, I teach college students, and I always go and I think, oh, this is something they know already. I am very surprised every time how little people realize that this is a cyclical process, right? So we talk about the honeymoon tension explosion, right? And cyclical because it's not a linear process, right? It's not always honeymoon leads to tension, tension leads to explosion. You can find different ways that plays out, right? So you can go right from a honeymoon phase to explosion, right? You can skip the honeymoon phase altogether and lead to tension and explosion, right? In terms of LGBTQ plus communities, right? You could have, for example, two people fall in love rather quickly or connect rather quickly. And I always try to avoid judging those quick connections, because when you're navigating a world where you feel very alone, it's typical to want to be with someone who can understand your experience. And so sometimes that connection can happen really quick before maybe you even really know that person. Those feelings come up and you might identify as love. It might be all sorts of things going on. So we've got what we call the honeymoon phase. Things seem really, really good right now, right? And then, you know, something might happen, which in every relationship, you start to learn that person and who they are and patterns, things you like, things you don't like. That's typical. But when a relationship is gearing towards that, okay, this is more so abuse, you are seeing a tension that rises to a level where, you know, this person is having very big reactions to things that are very typical. So for example, it should be okay that people go hang out with friends, right? That's okay. But if your partner is like, oh, why do you need to do that, right? Am I not enough for you? Do you not love me? Do you not like me? That might seem innocuous at first, but someone investigating, you know, or questioning your desire, your love, just because you want to hang out with friends is a little bit of a red flag. And so you have that aspect to it. And then those little pieces that are tense moments could lead to an explosion. Explosion doesn't necessarily always have to mean that it leads to a physical altercation or a sexual assault, but you see something that is really significantly manipulative, right? Or crosses a boundary or crosses or ignores consent in some way, right? And those dynamics are designed to chip away at a person's sense of autonomy, their sense of self, right? And create a reliance and overdependence on that other person. So that's kind of how I explain it when I'm talking with students about it.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And one of the senses that I had is as this process goes forward, it sounds like communication, honest communication could help, mm-hmm. and that there may not be as much honest communication when there's the tension and going up to mm-hmm. the explosion.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about it is none of us are really taught how to be in relationship with other people. This is a big kick of mine lately, actually, is that we just don't. First off, we don't have comprehensive sex education across the U.S. that is consistent and actually talks about, you know, things like communication, which I think is foundational to any relationship building, whether you're talking about intimate partners, friendships, any kind of interpersonal, you know, relationship. It comes down to how do I communicate with others? How do I understand myself and how I communicate? How does that come out when I'm interacting with other people? We tend to navigate relationships based on what we see and what we observe. And so when we're thinking about LGBTQ plus communities, this is where representation becomes very significant. Because if you don't have comprehensive sex education that talks about same-sex relationships, right, then you don't have that avenue. If you don't have community that's around you, adults who are part of the community to model that for you, you don't have that. You don't see it as much in the media, which thankfully we're seeing an increase in that aspect right now of, you know, that modeling, but it's also media. Media is designed to, like, the drama, the, you know, so then people think, okay, maybe that's how you do this. And the reality is that you don't have that. And so you don't know, okay, how am I to be in relationship with someone else who has maybe a similar experience as mine or similar identity to mine? And so, yeah, communication becomes a thing that connects with representation, and the lack of education that we have around all of this is seriously a recipe for disaster. And I'm not surprised that there are so many issues with people connecting with other people.
How important or how common is it that folks have seen violence in their parents or other family members?
Yeah. I think it certainly plays a part of it. You know, I really do think our childhood experiences are very formative in how we, again, understand and build relationship with other people. I don't think it's everything, but I definitely think it's a key part of how we come to understand ourselves and other folks. So growing up in a household where violence is very prevalent does not automatically mean you're going to grow up in and develop an abusive relationship, whether being an abusive person or being a victim of abuse or a survivor of abuse. But it certainly may shape what we understand as love and caring. And so you can take that piece and then you have other elements, right? So whether someone intervenes early on in your childhood, getting mentors, getting therapy, positive interventions can help. You know, we call those protective factors, right? So can really help someone understand that wasn't okay. You should not have had that experience. I struggle when people are like, well, you know, I had to go through it to become strong and resilient. And I'm like, no, I don't buy that. I don't think you have to go through anything like that to be strong and resilient. Not at all. Nobody, no child should have to witness nor experience anything like that. I think the struggle becomes if you don't have those protective factors, if you don't have those early interventions, if you don't have the modeling or someone to say, like, you don't need to go down that path, this isn't healthy, this isn't okay, then that snowballs, right? And if you continue with that internalization of a story that says, hey, this is what it means to love and to be loved, then you're going to struggle either in perpetuating that in your relationship or receiving it in a way because you think that is love.
That's really helpful. What about resources that people can access and things that are helpful, and perhaps what a family member might say that is not so helpful or what they could say that is helpful, please?
Those are great questions, especially the what to do versus not to do, right? In terms of resources, I always start local. And here, right in our very own backyard, we have the LGBT Center of Central PA that has a lot of resources in terms of support groups. And even if they don't have exactly what you need, they are definitely a resource of connecting with other people who may have what you need. So that's definitely a go-to for that. On a national level, you know, you have the National Lesbian and Gay Task Force is a big one that is designed to advance the, you know, resources, visibility, inclusivity of LGBTQ+ communities. You also have the Human Rights Coalition. Some of these bigger organizations are really doing great work on the policy level. So, you know, also like National Center for Transgender Equality would be one of them as well. That's also important. And you can go there and they have like various fact sheets and information, but also they lead to other areas. So if it's not Pennsylvania or Central Pennsylvania and you are looking for resources, these bigger organizations can help with that. We also have the Trevor Project, which I think is gaining visibility in terms of their hotline. Yes, they particularly are advertised as a suicide prevention hotline. I always tell people you can call and they will connect you wherever you need, right? So if that's the only thing you remember and you know, you're like, oh, that's LGBT, call them, they're safe, you can go there. Immigration Equality is a big national organization, and I like to bring them up because we have other intersections we have to think about. So like undocumented folks who are also queer, that in itself adds different elements of abuse. And so they're another national organization that's doing stuff at the national level. But again, they deal specifically with those intersections. And so if that is a resource that's needed. In Philly, we have the Mazzoni Center. They're a really big organization. They actually put on a trans wellness conference every year that's free to trans and non-binary communities. I always give that resource out to folks. Again, we're about an hour and a half from Philly, so you might not be able to access that physically, but guarantee if you reach out to them, they can offer other resources. The sad part with a lot of this is that there isn't as much locally. And I wish I get a lot of folks who are like, well, where can I go for this and this specifically to LGBTQ+ communities? And besides the LGBT Center of Central PA or the Pride Center of different colleges, right, in the area, there's not as much that I wish I could say, hey, go here. And you're going to have this. I wish that most intimate partner violence agencies had that intersection, but some of them don't at the moment, although some of them I know are trying to increase their understanding of that to serve those populations.
Wonderful information. And we may have listeners from all over the United States and perhaps beyond. Something that I think of as local to everyone is the situation where perhaps someone wants to get a therapist. And how does one find a therapist that is going to be helpful to them? Because I've seen in the past people have had horrible experiences with therapists, and then they never want to go see a therapist again because they assume that all therapists are stigmatizing and discriminatory.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I wish I said I had, you know, I had an easy answer for that. Again, some of this is word of mouth. Some of this is knowing who to ask. I get a lot of inquiries just because I'm very out and visible and say, hey, I'm a resource, right? Not only as a social worker educator, I'm also queer and non-binary. So I tell folks like, you know, I may not know everything, but I will help you find someone. I'm also someone who is in private practice. I'm very lucky to educate students who go on to do great work as clinicians. They're just not always as visible. So reach out to the folks you can rely on that you know, hey, this is a safe space, a safe person. They may not be able to take me on as a client, but maybe they might be able to connect me with someone who is equally as safe. Because that is tough. And not everyone's advertised as, hey, I know all LGBTQ plus, you know, information. But the person I work for, Nakisha Kenny at Elevated Mental Health Services, she gives me clients all the time because she's like, hey, you know, I have a trans client need. I have a non-binary client need. I have, right? You know, she's a social worker. She understands how important it is to have somebody who understands. I wish we had a huge directory of folks who were knowledgeable about this. But for now, that's probably my best advice is to connect with someone who is safe or reliable.
I think that's great. And I'll add something from my experience as a family physician. And that is that you can always go to see somebody once and see if there's a fit. And you don't have to see that person forever.
Yeah.
And if there is a good fit, you may choose to. But if there's not a good fit, there's other folks. And to not take that as a once and done. I kind of think about it as interviewing.
Yes.
You're that provider. And perhaps they don't know everything about LGBTQ, but if they're compassionate and kind and willing to learn, that may be adequate or even better than adequate, because as they're learning, you get to teach your therapist and vice versa.
Absolutely. So, and I always tell, like, there are little kind of things you can put out there to help kind of investigate whether they are inclusive or caring or understanding, sometimes just little pieces of information and see how they respond to that. Doesn't mean you have to tell them your whole story. But even using the word, hey, my pronouns are, you know, a statement like my pronouns are, and seeing how they respond to that could give you a lot of information.
Absolutely. Well, this time has gone quickly.
Too fast.
Yes, absolutely. So I would just like to give you a minute or so to just hit the high points or give a piece of information or whatever seems appropriate from your point of view to help the listeners to take something forth in their lives.
Yeah, I would say the biggest thing is this is relevant to everyone. And whether, and I love that you said, you may not know everything about our communities or what to say or not to say. I always say, if you have a compassionate heart, that's a good start with something. So become that safe space. Find out more information. Learn how you can be part of creating positive change. So that way we have more resources for folks going through this.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Dr. J.
Thank you. Appreciate it. This was great. Thanks.
We're Randy's House of Angels is sponsoring season 2 of a series of podcasts that will serve as a resource to anyone impacted by domestic violence, including parents, guardians, caseworkers, health providers, advocates, teachers, trauma specialists, clinicians, and more, to provide an overview of domestic violence and how to handle situations where domestic violence is present. Season 2 will include a series of 7 podcasts that will include an overview and understanding the link between domestic violence and homelessness, the relationship between domestic violence and pet abuse, how to navigate domestic violence in an LGBTQ+ relationship, understanding teen violence, the challenges of survivors and resilience revolution from victim to victor, and exploring how cultural traditions impact domestic violence. The podcast will include testimony and stories from experts who work in the field of domestic violence, criminal justice, and social work academia, and a survivor who was a victim of the domestic violence. This podcast will be broadcasted starting in July 24 and running through September of 2024. Go to Randy's House of Angels website at randyshouseofangels.org if you missed the podcast, if you'd like any of the resources that support the podcast, and to take a brief survey. Your feedback is essential to shaping and informing future episodes of our show.